You are now listening to the OrthoBullets podcast.
This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of both bone forearm fractures from the pediatric section on orthobullets.com. Both bone forearm fractures are one of the most common pediatric fractures, estimated around 40% of all pediatric fractures. They tend to be more common in males than females, and as far as location of these fractures, 14% are located in the distal physis, 60% in the distal metaphysis, 20% are midshaft, and 4% are in the proximal third. The mechanism of injury is usually due to a fall from a height, a sporting event, or a playground equipment injury. An important point about the pathophysiology of these injuries is that the peak incidence of both bone forearm fractures is during peak bone turnover, which leads to a mismatch in bone remodeling. Associated conditions with both bone forearm fractures include floating elbow, in which 15% of patients present with an ipsilateral supracondylar fracture, aka a floating elbow, and 1% of patients have a neurologic injury associated with the both bone forearm fracture, most commonly an injury to the median nerve. To understand the anatomy of these fractures, it's important to review the relevant osteology, musculature, and soft tissues. With respect to osteology, there is a physiologic apex lateral bowing of the radius and a physiologic apex posterior bowing of the ulna. And as far as the muscles, the biceps and supinator muscles flex and supinate the proximal fragment of the fracture. The pronator teres and pronator quadratus muscles pronate the distal fragment, and the brachioradialis dorsiflexes and radially deviates the distal fragment. With respect to the soft tissues, the periosteum is often intact on the concave side of the fracture, and the interosseous membrane is taut in neutral to slight supination. Both bone forearm fractures are classified by either fracture type or fracture location and pattern. Fracture type is basically incomplete or complete fractures. Examples of incomplete fractures are greenstick fractures, torus fractures, and plastic deformation of the bones. Fracture location refers to proximal third, middle third, and distal third. And fracture pattern basically refers to an apex volar or an apex dorsal pattern. Kids who sustain a both bone forearm fracture present with symptoms of forearm pain and refusal to use the arm. Inspection on physical exam usually reveals swelling, deformity, as well as ecchymosis. And always make sure to check for an open fracture, which can be subtle poke holes and can often be missed if not evaluated by an orthopedic surgeon. Patients will obviously have tenderness to palpation around the fracture. However, a complete examination of the injured extremity should be carried out to rule out an ipsilateral injury. Physical exam should also evaluate neurovascular status, which includes assessment for neurovascular injury and ruling out a compartment syndrome. Recommended views on radiographs include AP as well as lateral forearm x-rays. And you should also obtain orthogonal x-rays of the elbow and wrist for ipsilateral injury. Findings on plain films can include fracture of both radius and ulna, fracture of a single bone with plastic deformation of the other bone, no fracture with atypical bowing patterns suggesting plastic deformation, and or rotational malalignment. With respect to rotational malalignment, it's important to remember that the bicipital tuberosity and radial styloid should be 180 degrees apart on the AP view. Ulnar styloid and the coronoid are 180 degrees apart on the lateral view. The diameter of the proximal and distal fragments should match, and the thickness of the cortices should match on proximal and distal fragments. When talking about treatment of both bone forearm fractures, it's first important to review what is considered an acceptable reduction, which is driven by patient age and location of the fracture, with younger patients having more remodeling potential and proximal fractures having lower tolerances. So in general, for patients 0 to 10 years old, an acceptable reduction is considered one that is less than 15 degrees angulated, less than 45 degrees malrotated, and bayonet apposition is acceptable if it is less than 1 centimeter short. For patients older than 10 years old, an acceptable reduction is considered one that is less than 10 degrees angulated, less than 30 degrees malrotated, and no amount of bayonet apposition is acceptable. For patients approaching skeletal maturity, that is less than 2 years of growth remaining, no amount of angulation, malrotation, and bayonet apposition is considered acceptable. It's also important to remember that remodeling decreases as one goes from distal to proximal in the forearm. Generally accepted limits of shaft angulation for cast treatment for girls 8 years of age or younger and boys 10 years or younger are 20 degrees for distal third, 15 degrees for middle third, and 10 degrees for proximal third fractures. Non-operative management of both bone forearm fractures includes close reduction and immobilization, which is indicated for green stick injuries, plastic deformation if over 20 degrees, and bayonet apposition if less than 10 years old and growth remains. Most pediatric forearm fractures can be treated without surgery when an adequate reduction is maintained according to the criteria that we just discussed before. In the emergency room, options for analgesia before closed reduction of these fractures can vary from a local block, a regional block, conscious sedation, and general anesthesia. After closed reduction, either splinting or casting can be carried out to maintain the reduction and immobilize the extremity. Bowman et al. Performed a retrospective review of 282 pediatric patients that underwent closed reduction and casting of a both bone forearm fracture to identify factors associated with failure of non-operative treatment and the time frame in which failure is most likely. They concluded that children aged 10 years old or greater with proximal third fractures seem to be at highest risk for failure when treated non-operatively for both bone forearm fractures. Paradoxically, ulna angulation less than 15 degrees were also predictive of failure. Regarding time frame of failure, 55% failed by the end of the first week and 95% failed by 3 weeks, emphasizing the importance of early follow-up. As far as operative options, percutaneous versus open reduction and intramedullary nailing, and open reduction and internal fixation are the main options. Percutaneous versus open reduction and intramedullary nailing is indicated for unacceptable alignment following closed reduction. Again, that is angulation greater than 15 degrees and rotation greater than 45 degrees in children less than 10 years old. Angulation greater than 10 degrees and rotation greater than 30 degrees in children older than 10 years old. Bayonet apposition in children older than 10 years old. Both bone forearm fractures in children greater than 13 years old. And relative indications in highly displaced fractures. Open reduction and internal fixation has the same indications as percutaneous versus open reduction and intramedullary nailing, with the addition of open fractures, refractures, and relative indications for highly comminuted or segmental fractures. So to quickly review the techniques for the spectrum of management in both bone forearm fractures, let's go over closed reduction, percutaneous versus open intramedullary nailing, and open reduction and internal fixation. Closed reduction for plastic deformations requires steady three-point bending to counteract the bending deformity in these injuries. The complication to be aware of here is a fracture may occur with abrupt force rather than a slow, gradual increase in force. For green stick fractures, reduction is achieved through a combination of traction, direct pressure with the thumb, rotation, and three-point bending. Apex volar fractures are treated with pronation, and apex dorsal fractures are treated with supination. Or maybe a simpler way to put that is to bring the thumb towards the apex of the fracture. Reduction for green stick fractures can also be aided with finger traps and counterweights. Casting or splinting maintains reduction through three-point molding and interosseous molds. It's important to remember that there is no increase in loss of reduction with short arm versus long arm casting. However, there is an increase in loss of reduction with an increased cast index of greater than 0.8. And the cast index is the ratio of sagittal to coronal width from the inside edges of the cast at the fracture site. The major complication to be aware of in closed reductions for green stick fractures is compartment syndrome with excessive swelling and tight circumferential casting. However, bivalving the cast or splinting in the emergency room setting may help to mitigate this risk. With respect to the approach for percutaneous versus open intramedullary nailing, the ulnar nail is inserted through the tip of the olecranon or through the anconius to avoid damage to the ulnar nerve. The radial nail is inserted just proximal to the radial styloid or in the dorsal aspect of the distal radius proximal to the physis. It's important to reduce the bone prior to the passage of the nails, and you can start with whichever bone is easiest to reduce. If you wind up being unsuccessful in passing the nail after 3 attempts, opening up the fracture is recommended as multiple unsuccessful attempts at passage of the nail increases the risk of compartment syndrome. Removal of the nails is often required 3 to 4 months after surgery. As far as outcomes for intramedullary nailing, there is a shorter surgical time than an ORIF, there is less blood loss than an ORIF, and there are equal union rates as well as restoration of the radial bow and rotation as an ORIF. As far as the approach for ORIF, there is often a combination of a volar approach and ulnar approach centered over the fracture. It's important to minimize soft tissue damage and avoid excessive periosteal stripping with this technique. Simple fracture patterns can be rigidly stabilized after anatomic reduction, while comminuted patterns or bone loss requires relative stability over the fracture sites. Complications of open reduction internal fixation can include rotational malalignment, non-union, and malunion. Overall complications after treatment of both bone forearm fractures include refracture, malunion, compartment syndrome, and synostosis. Refracture occurs in 5 to 10% of patients following both bone forearm fractures. Plate removal and green stick patterns are risk factors for refracture, and treatment consists of open reduction and internal fixation. Malunion may be related to initial reduction or delay in diagnosis, and if symptomatic, treatment consists of corrective osteotomies. The incidence of symptomatic malunion is seen as the loss of pronation and supination. Dumont et al. Studied the effect of malrotation of the radius and or ulna on supination and pronation in cadaver forearms. They determined that malrotation of the radius in supination led to the largest decrease in rotation due to a single bone, while a combined rotational malunion of the radius and ulna in opposite directions led to the largest limitation of the range of motion. They determined that rotational malunion may be isolated or part of a complex angular/rotational deformity, with rotational malunion leading to increased impairment. Compartment syndrome is a major complication to be aware of, and risk factors include high-energy trauma or multiple attempts at reduction and nail passage. Again, if you have an unsuccessful nail passage after 2 to 3 attempts, open the fracture site to visualize the passage of the nail. Treatment of compartment syndrome for these patients would consist of forearm fasciotomies. Synostosis is a rare complication of both bone forearm fractures. It occurs following head injury and high energy trauma, and resection rarely leads to an improved range of motion. Okay, so those are the major points about pediatric both bone forearm fractures. Let's go over a few questions now to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. First question. An 8-year-old boy sustains the injury demonstrated in Figure A, which demonstrates a both bone forearm fracture in a skeletally immature patient. It is a closed, isolated injury. After closed reduction and casting, post-reduction imaging demonstrates anatomic reduction. X-rays at 1-week follow-up demonstrate some loss of reduction, now with approximately 12 degrees of dorsal angulation. With continued observation and maintenance of this alignment, long-term outcome is most likely to include, and the choices are 1. Decreased pronation/supination, 2. Malunion, 3. Decreased elbow flexion, 4. No additional sequelae, and 5. Non-union. So in this question, although the fracture has developed angulation since the reduction, the magnitude of the deformity is still acceptable given that the patient is less than 10 years old. Complications are unlikely as long as the alignment is maintained. So to quickly review, initial management of closed both bone forearm fractures include closed reduction and immobilization with monitoring of alignment on weekly plane radiographs. Operative intervention is considered if the alignment is unacceptable following closed reduction. For children less than 10 years old, complete displacement with bayonet apposition, angulation less than 15 degrees, and rotation less than 45 degrees are acceptable and lead to no additional sequelae. So back to the question. The correct answer is 4, no additional sequelae. The other choices are wrong because the patient is 8 years old with angulation and rotation within acceptable limits. Therefore, if he maintains this alignment, he should have no additional sequelae. 84% of test takers got this question right. Next question. The risk for remanipulation of a pediatric distal forearm fracture after initial reduction and casting is most closely related to, and the choices are 1. Initial immobilization with a short arm cast, 2. The location of the fracture, 3. Initial translation of the fracture, 4. Initial angulation of the fracture, and 5. A single versus both bone fracture. So this is sort of a tricky one. Initial fracture translation has been shown to be associated with a higher risk of remanipulation. Fracture reduction is important, and if there is residual translation after reduction, fixation should actually be considered. The location of the fracture or single versus both bone fracture in itself is not a risk factor for redisplacement, nor is the use of long versus short arm casts. So the answer to this question is 3, initial translation of the fracture, and only 22% of test takers answered this one correctly. Next question. A 12-year-old boy fell sustaining a both bone forearm fracture. Which of the following is true regarding the radiographic assessment of anatomic forearm alignment after reduction? 1. The ulnar styloid and coronoid process are best seen on the AP radiograph. 2. On the lateral radiograph, the radial styloid and biceps tuberosity are oriented 90 degrees apart. 3. On the AP radiograph, the ulnar styloid and coronoid process are oriented 180 degrees apart. 4. On the AP radiograph, the radial styloid and biceps tuberosity are oriented 180 degrees apart. And 5. On the AP radiograph, the radial styloid and biceps tuberosity are oriented 90 degrees apart. So this is a straight anatomy question. When a forearm fracture is properly reduced, the AP radiograph demonstrates the radial styloid and biceps tuberosity are 180 degrees apart. On the lateral, the coronoid process and the ulnar styloid will be 180 degrees apart. So the answer to this question is 4. On the AP radiograph, the radial styloid and biceps tuberosity are oriented 180 degrees apart, and 74% of test takers got this one correct. And the final question, a 10-year-old boy falls off his bicycle, sustaining the injury seen in figures A and B, which depict a highly angulated pediatric diaphyseal radius and ulna fracture. After initial unsuccessful close reduction, he undergoes operative fixation. When comparing ORIF with a plate to a percutaneous technique using intramedullary nails, which of the following is true? And the choices are 1. Non-union rates are significantly higher in the intramedullary nailing group. 2. Blood loss is higher in the intramedullary nailing group. 3. Restoration of radial bow is similar in both groups. 4. Surgical time is greater in the intramedullary nailing group. And 5. Forearm rotation is greater in the ORIF group. So the clinical scenario and radiographs depict a pediatric diaphyseal radius and ulnar fracture. Operative indications include open fractures and fractures with unacceptable alignment after close reduction, as is the case in this question stem. The optimal fracture patterns for the intramedullary nailing technique are mid-shaft pediatric both bone forearm fractures with minimal comminution in transverse and oblique patterns and acutely after injury prior to the presentation of fracture callus. Reinhardt et al. Reviewed the outcome of 31 pediatric both bone forearm fractures treated with intramedullary nailing versus ORIF. The intramedullary nailing group had shorter surgical time and less blood loss, and no differences were found in rates of union, radial bow magnitude, and forearm rotation. So the correct answer to this question is 3. Restoration of radial bow is similar in both groups, and 70% of test takers got this question correct. That's all for this review on pediatric both bone forearm fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. See you all tomorrow.